What if I told you that the government wants to increase your kid's net worth by over $200,000 during their lifetime, and all you have to do is say yes? Keep listening as we dive in. Welcome to the Money Meets Medicine podcast, where we talk all about the personal finance topics you wish you would learn in medical school. I'm your host, Dr. Jimmy Turner, and here's your co-host, who just finished his fourth cup of coffee and his second breakfast, Justin Harvey.
Jimmy, great to see you as always. Yeah, I'm traveling with my family this week, and whenever Sarah doesn't have to get up early for the anesthesia thing, I like to get up early, get the day going, go to the gym, get some steps in, and then coffee, breakfast, and then the family catches up, and it's glorious. So I'm feeling like $1 million right now.
That sounds very English of you. Don't the English do like a second breakfast?
Yeah, that's what I have heard from Lord of the Rings. That's the only context I have for that.
I think that's where I'm drawing it from too, hilariously. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. But speaking of English, we're going to talk about America. America, who embarrassingly lost in the World Cup last night. You and I were talking about that beforehand. So we're not going to talk about that because that was bad in the World Cup. Very bad. But we are going to talk about Trump accounts for American kids, which is
how strange that Donald Trump would name accounts Trump accounts. I was actually taken aback. Didn't see that one coming.
I was so shocked that he would name the account after himself, actually. It's just mind-blowing.
And maybe the Supreme Court will actually force him to, after putting his name on the accounts, remove his name from the accounts. Wouldn't that be karmic?
That would be very comedic, actually. And yeah, but I was not surprised at all. I was kidding earlier, by the way. But yeah, I'm excited to talk about this topic because I intentionally actually did not research a ton for this episode because I knew that you were doing that. And I'm looking forward to learning alongside you. And I did that because I wanted to be able to ask you questions that I felt like our listeners would want to know the answer to. And if I didn't know as much walking into this one, I feel like I'd do a better job of being able to accomplish that goal. Before we dive in, I do want to remind people that we are in July recording this. And so that means that a lot of you just finished training. And a lot of you probably don't know that when it comes to disability insurance, you only have a finite amount of time to get what's called the guaranteed standard issue plan. It's the kind that 50% of doctors need. And that window actually closes about 60 days or less after you finish training. So if you happen to be the person who got through training and listens to this podcast and somehow you didn't get disability insurance with Money Meets Medicine Disability, you have approximately 30 something days, give or take, to get that box checked. And this is really important because that kind is the kind that 50% of doctors need and just goes away. After that, there's a cliff. It's no longer offered. And so the guaranteed standard issue, which is an own occupation, individually owned disability policy, the good stuff, is no longer available to you. There's lots of reasons for getting disability insurance as soon as you can in training. So if you aren't there yet and you haven't finished, you still need to get that job done. That said, for those that just finished, it's super, super important. You can go to moneymeetsmedicine.com/disability where you can get a quote from us here at Money Meets Medicine Disability Insurance. Justin, I just want to know about all of the things Trump account. Here's what I know about Trump accounts, and it's very little. I know that Trump opened these accounts. I know that there's a certain amount of money that you can put in. It's dependent upon the age of the kid, because I have a kid that's 9. I think that she's the only one that qualifies, and it's not the full $1,000, I don't think. And that money is in an account that grows for them, and that seems like a wonderful thing. That's about the extent of my knowledge on Trump accounts right now. So where should we start this conversation?
Yeah, so let's start at the beginning. And just a quick preface, I'm casting aspersions at our commander-in-chief, but I actually really like the spirit of what we're doing here. And I have long heard from various, the one guy who sticks in my mind, his name is Bill Ackman. He's a hedge fund manager. And he basically had this idea I read on marketwatch.com like 10 years ago. Like, why don't we just basically do exactly what this is? Like open an account, let some kids throw the money in it, peg it to the S&P, and they're going to blow the freaking socks off of what the same contribution in air quotes made via Social Security taxes into the Social Security Trust Fund is going to do, which is essentially like a big pyramid scheme anyway. It's pegged to S&P returns, and it's not pegged to the American birth rate and FICA taxation in the future, which is, as anyone would know, it's a much better trade, that 10% per year annualized since 1919 compared to something much more modest. So I think this idea is a great one. This is brand new. This went live literally this week. So there's a lot that is, there's even new rules being made about it. And there's a lot of best practice that is still being understood. So everything that follows is based on my research and is uber preliminary. And there are some people who can easily say, yes, this is a pretty good idea for you. There's a lot of people that it's like, we're still in wait and see territory. But this is an account that was rolled out on the 4th of July, the 250th birthday of America.
Not surprising again.
The technical name is the 530A account. And this is essentially, if you think about all the different account types, and there are many that are available to kids, custodial Roth IRAs, 529s, UTMA, UGMAs, this is most similar to a traditional IRA. And kids under 18 can access it if they have a social security number. It's got some complexity and some rules around funding and around withdrawals that we can get more into. But the most sort of eye-catching part of this program is that there's free money, in air quotes, free money coming to fund Trump accounts for any children born basically during Trump's tenure, 2025 to 2028. So if your kid is born January of 25 through the next few years, you can open an account and get a free $1,000.
So to be clear, because I think what you said before is important, this is a little bit like student loan territory where it's an important topic. We need to talk about it on the show, but we also recognize there are things that are moving and shaking and happening right now in the midst of that landscape. And so as we educate you in real time, we're doing that knowing that some of the things that we're going to tell you may have a different stance or a different view or slightly altered 3, 6, 9 months from now as we better understand them once there are precedents and people that have gone through this process. And so as a listener, I would encourage you to just take it in that light, because this is really good information and it's not information you want to sit on. You want to be learning about it, but we're learning in real time with you because, as you just pointed out, Justin, this literally just came out. And I think that's important to call out. You mentioned the traditional IRA. I am curious about this from a, if we think about, that's the beginning of it. Hey, you put some money in for your kid. The government puts some money in for your kid. On the back end of this, and then maybe we can fill in the details in between, how is this treated from a who owns it account standpoint? Because when we talked about UTMA and UGMA accounts in prior episodes and how, depending on the kid, that account may be entirely appropriate, or you might have a kid that you don't trust at all at the age of 18 or 20 that you don't want having access to the money because they're just going to blow it. And you saved a lot of money for this kid inside this account every single year just for them to get it at the age of 18 and do stupid things. And so from an account ownership standpoint, I know that at 18, they can access it, but who owns it? Does it become immediately the kids, or is it still under the adult's custodian?
So it is, this has, based on my research at this point, this has been described as a child-owned account. So it's in the name of the kid. And actually, Jimmy, for the sake of science, I did not want to do this, but for the sake of science, and because I value this show and this listenership, and by the way, shout out to Dr. Nate, your colleague from also North Carolina, who sent me an email and said, hey, I want to know about the Trump accounts. And for any listeners, if you got things you're wondering about, definitely email Jimmy and we would love to live fire research and educate. But I opened these accounts. I opened one for each child just because I wanted to see how it worked and what it looked
love
like.
It.
We always start with values when we're talking about financial planning decisions. And I can tell you the values of a family and also free cash flow, obviously, but what do you want provision for your kids to look like in the future economically is a primary driver for how are you going to interact with Trump accounts. And you pointed out a great issue, problem with this is when you're 18, it's your money and it's essentially like a traditional IRA at that time. Interestingly, Jimmy, you probably have things like this in medicine for you where you say this, whatever this, whether it's an idea, a term for a certain type of procedure or practice or a certain drug where you're like, you just hear the word and you're like, oh my gosh, the PTSD is roaring back right now. Maybe you have something like that.
Yeah.
I do in finance and it's called basis tracking.
Okay, sure.
Where basis tracking for financial people, the first few years of my life when I was working with ultra high net worth folks who had a lot of issues with tracking basis. What this means is whenever you buy a stock, there's basis associated with that purchase. So I buy a share of Apple at $100, it goes to $200. I've got to remember that I paid $100 for that first share so that when I sell it for $200, I can do the math on the gain. Now in 2026, the custodial reporting is very sophisticated and this is relatively easy and seamless and totally invisible to the investor. But there was a time when basis tracking was very challenging and more manual. What this is doing, what these Trump accounts are creating is a basis tracking, I'll call it a problem. You've got to track your basis, meaning every time you make a contribution, that is a non-taxable, it's non-deductible, so it doesn't reduce your tax bill, but also that contribution, if I threw $5,000 into a Trump account for one of my kids, which is the statutory maximum per child, if I did that, I would have to remember, okay, in 2026, on July 18th, I funded $25,000, I funded $5,000, and that $5,000 will then be part of the basis calculation. Then there's a future five and a future five. And this isn't a huge deal, maybe if you're organized and keep decent records, but it's important. It's very important to understand your basis, because one of the good future uses of this account is when you're 18, you're not making big dollars yet. And if you've got a Trump account with $250,000 in it, you've got to know how much of that is basis, but you can do one of the best practices that has been described in this nascent stage is you can do Roth conversions. What you do?
Oh, 100%. That's the first thing I would do. Yeah.
But you can do some conversions.
Because you make no money at 18.
Or maybe even distribute some of that for various purposes.
Yeah.
But tracking your basis is an important part of that. And because there is taxable income if it's when that happens, but only to the extent of gains. So here's the point. There's some work that is required here. And the systems don't necessarily exist yet to cleanly track this basis. And it might be that systems are so good that it won't be a big deal in the way that it's invisible to investors now when I buy and sell in my E-Trade account or whatever, that it will be very clean and tidy. But I can tell you that there's a thing here called basis in a traditional, in a pre-tax account that most investors may not realize is even a thing. Jimmy, for you in your traditional IRA, if you had one, most investors think, oh, traditional is pre-tax. I take that out in the future. I pay taxes on it. That is true, except if your traditional IRA has basis, which a lot of people don't even know that a traditional IRA can have basis. Basis means a contribution for which you didn't take a deduction and on which you need not pay taxes whenever you take that money back out. I was actually on the phone. This is another area where I have this PTSD moment where I was on the phone with somebody from a big tax prep firm that I'm not going to name publicly because I don't like dealing with lawyers, where I was arguing with the rep because we did a backdoor Roth contribution and conversion where you put in the traditional and then you convert it. And they're like, look, you converted this traditional IRA. That's a $6,000 income event. And I was like, no, it's the basis. It's a return of a contribution for which we did not take a deduction. So even this tax prep person who presumably had been doing this long enough to know better, didn't even understand this idea.
So I don't mind lawyers as much as you do. So the reason I left TurboTax was because when I became an attending, and that's at the point when I started learning about personal finance, really took the deep dive. I was reading the books, listening to the podcast, whole nine yards. And I was having to explain to the tax professional, because I bought the upgrade where you could talk to a CPA, how to fill out an 8606, and that this was not a taxable event, and that in fact, a backdoor Roth IRA is actually a thing. I no longer used TurboTax after that. And so
I sent him an invoice for that.
Yeah, I probably should have. Say, hey, here's your ongoing, your CME for accountants. Here's your continuing medical education, your CE, I guess you should say. But yeah, so this immediately, as I'm thinking through this, we can talk through the mechanics of it because I think people are going to be interested in terms of like, how much money can I put in there for my kid and that sort of thing. But I agree with you. When I have conversations with people, my questions are always, what are your goals? What are your goals moving forward? And I think that's important in every aspect of life. Even Wesley's baseball career, which has become this thing we have to make constant decisions about. I have to ask Wesley, hey, Wesley, what are your goals? Is your goal to just hang out with your friends and have fun and be a pretty good baseball player where we work on things at home? Or are you trying to start on your high school team? We live in a county where there's one high school, one, just one. And so it's like, you got to be pretty good to start on that high school team. And it's not a bad team. Historically, it's a pretty good team. And so for him, the decisions we make about his baseball career are dependent upon what his goals are and what our goals are. And so for this, it's the same thing, because what is this account going to be for? Because as a financially literate 40-year-old, first thing I thought of is, hey, you're going to put in post-tax money into this account. And yes, you're going to have a basis. But when I was 18, I earned $0 in income. And so I could take up to whatever the number is from a tax standpoint without, if you're converting it to Roth, without paying a lot of taxes or any taxes, depending on how you do it, on that money. And so that, from a financial perspective, sounds like a brilliant thing to do. And what a wonderful way to start out your financial life. But I also remember being 18 to 22 and getting the GI Bill paid to me each month in college because my dad served in the Navy. And I promptly spent every single dime of it on pizza and Taco Bell and poker nights with my friends and had nothing to show for it after the fact because I wasn't financially literate. Now, if you're listening to the show, you probably are financially literate and you're hopefully raising children that are also going to be financially literate. So maybe you're not Jimmy Turner circa 2004 to 2008, who decided to blow all of his GI Bill money, which was like $600 a month, by the way, a significant amount of money for me back then, because I just didn't know anything about personal finance. And yes, seems like a super savvy thing. We're going to put this post-tax money in. It's going to grow. If you convert Roth and you're thoughtful about it, you may not pay much tax at all on this money. And what a great place to be. But also, if it's owned by the kid and they're not financially literate and they see that they have $150,000 sitting inside of an account that has their name on it, there's a really good chance that person is just going to blow it. You know, I'm of two minds as I'm thinking through this.
I'm right here with you, Jimmy, and I have a lot of love and respect for the way that they taught me and my siblings to handle money, and they were very empowering, but not enabling. And it takes a lot of wisdom to thread that needle, and I think they did a good job, and they equipped us to become business owners. I mentioned before we hit play that the late 90s Ford Ranger, which I will always be sentimentally attached. My dad helped us buy a pickup truck for a couple grand when I was in high school. And my brother and I, we cut grass and we were equipped to earn and are very privileged to have parents that cared enough about us to do that in a way that was very thoughtful.
Sure.
How the Trump account fits into that paradigm is it does fit into that paradigm, but you need to answer the question of how do I want to equip my kids? And Jimmy, I like to use the idea of a savings hierarchy. And I know you've talked about this in different language, but this is how we present this for our clients is if we're saving in a tax optimized way, where physician households, if you're not in the top margin, you're close to it. Taxes are important in dealing with taxes and investing in a tax efficient way is very important. So what is the tax benefit for us here and what can we do with it? As we think about the savings hierarchy, we've got employer plans, typically pre-tax savings at the top. You max those out. Or if you're self-employed, it's a solo 401k, it's a SEP IRA, whatever. We're doing all that. And then we're doing typically backdoor Roths or 529s. Those kind of come next. And then we get into the wild west of taxable investments and other stuff, LPs and any other hedge fund, private equity, interesting things you want to do. The Trump accounts would sit right above that, probably in my mind, below the 529s, but above the wild west of taxable melange of everything else.
Sure.
To say there's some tax benefit here. There's a statutory maximum for how much you can put in. There is future advantage to my kids. There's the ability likely for them to convert some of this or for them to use it to kick off their life. But it's not like we're going to buy our first car money. It's not we're going to basically any kind of spending before the age of 18. And right. So it's more restricted. And I think some of the most beneficial, psychologically beneficial things about this account and where it's nestled on that chart are for intergenerational wealth transfer. If you've got the parents of our listeners who are like, I want to start chucking money down the family tree to some of those lower branches, it's a nice, easy way to say, okay, just like 529 funding, which is a little more, you can fund up to the annual gifting limits of the 529s. This is a nice clean number. It's $5,000. And if you're one of those people, you got 27 grandchildren and you want to start migrating your millions, you can fund Trump accounts. And there is a meaningful benefit to doing so. And it's got the benefit of the concrete number associated with full funding that's okay, $5,000 a year like clockwork. It's a nice way to plug into sort of that philosophy. Now, again, through the values lens, is that something you want to do? It depends. I think another cohort for which this may make sense would be, and this probably goes without saying, is we're doing all the other things already. And we're just looking for more mattresses to stuff money into. And I kind of put the whole life policies into this category. Like, I'm not saying you should never buy a whole life insurance policy. I just think you should do, in many cases, I hate these black and white because nothing's black and white, but usually you should do everything else first. Max out all the other accounts. You should have seven figures in taxable accounts. And we're looking for new mattresses.
Yeah.
This is a great other mattress to kind of put in that same category.
I like that way of looking at it, honestly, because whole life insurance is a great example of this and people have to understand what marketing and business when the whole life conversation happens. So from an insurance agent side, talking about whole life, you got to understand the incentives there and that the person's going to make an absolute killing selling you a policy. And so that should flavor your conversation with that person. But the person who is 100% of the time, black and white, always against whole life insurance policies, I'll teach you something that I know as an online marketer for the last 10 years. Having a contrarian take on something gets you a lot of business. And so when you come out and say, without exception, a whole life insurance policy is the worst possible thing you can do financially, all of a sudden you're like, hold on, but this is very different than what the traditional financial industry is telling me. And so that person is going to have a lot of traffic because it is a very easy to understand, hard stance, black and white. It's the same thing as Dave Ramsey saying, you got to pay off all your non-mortgage debt before you invest a dime, which is obviously a terrible financial take if you just do the math. This isn't a question. It's just do the math. If you put some money towards investments and some money towards debt, it turns out that person wins 1,000% of the time. And so when you have a black and white take on a financial subject or really most subjects in life, that needs to kind of raise a red flag for you that, oh, maybe there's some nuance here that's not really being captured. Because I agree with you. And I would say for 98, 99% of doctors, whole life doesn't make sense. But the reason it doesn't make sense for most of those doctors is because you have other things that you could be doing that make more sense than a whole life policy before you get one. Doctors that are not really dealing with their debt in a way that makes sense, or they're not filling up all of their available tax base from a retirement standpoint. They have so many other things that they could be doing, and then they get sold a $50,000 whole life policy. And so I love the way that you're framing this, that this has a place. You just need to be thoughtful about the fact, like, where on this list of potential investment opportunities that I have for me and for my family does this fall? And it sounds like for you, it falls further down the list. You need to be checking a lot of other boxes before you consider stuffing money into this account. Longtime listeners of Money Meets Medicine know that I don't recommend other businesses or services lightly. And that's because this entire platform was built out of my desire to prevent others from being harmed like I was by bad advice and bad actors in the financial space. This is one reason I say no to over 95% of pitches that I get for advertising and sponsorships on Money Meets Medicine. But some partnerships are no-brainers, like recommending the same company that I use in my own personal life. For example, working with Gelt for my tax strategy is set to save my family more than $40,000 per year in taxes compared to my old CPA, who only touched base in February or March each year. Gelt, on the other hand, is a proactive, tech-forward tax strategy company, and I could say, from experience, that their customer service is incredible. So if you're a locum stock or a practice owner, partner getting a K-1, surgery center owner, or maybe you're a W-2 physician with a 5 or 6 figure side income, you need more than a CPA who just checks in February or March. You need a modern CPA firm built for business owners and high-earning professionals with a strong specialization in physicians. Summer is the easiest time to switch, and Gelt is built for that transition. Dedicated tax strategists, real human expertise, technology doing the grunt work in the background. To make it even more of a no-brainer than it already is for the docs that fit that bill, Money Meets Medicine has partnered with Gelt to offer a 10% discount on your first year services when working with them. Head over to moneymeetsmedicine.com/CPA to schedule a call and get that 10% discount when you do so. Now back to the show.
Yeah, and for me, and I think for a lot, the way I'm thinking about this right now, and again, there's a lot of literature that still needs to come out in terms of best practice, but 529s, as much as I do think higher ed is going to implode or be meaningfully reformed in some way, in not only in my lifetime, but probably before my kids are of age to do that, I anticipate that'll be the case. I personally still see a 529 funding because of the flexibility of 529s, because you can use it for K-12, because there are some safety valves, there's a Roth conversion for a portion. There's a pretty broad way we can describe qualifying educational expense. I still see 529 as a primary way of me helping my kids. A Trump account can be good if you want to give them a running head start on retirement funding and have compounding for, again, with the goal of them using it for their latter years. You would start funding it today and then they get 60 years of compounding. And
let's give some context to this, right? And correct me if I'm wrong. I know that if your kid's just born, the government gives you $1,000 and you can put, what, $5,000 into it each year?
Yes.
And so they get the initial one, and then every year after that, you can put five.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Over 18 years, that's not an insignificant amount of money. That's almost $100,000, right?
That's right.
Not 90 grand. And so you can imagine if it's compounding at the S&P's typical rate, that $100,000 is going to turn into well over $200,000 by the time they turn 18, potentially. And so with that, there is opportunity there. I think it's important to just put in context, like, what kind of numbers we're talking about. We're talking about the government putting in $1,000. It's not always $1,000. Like, my 9-year-old can't get that much because she was born after a certain date. There are different amounts for different age groups right now. But the $5,000 every year is something that is invested by the parents.
That's right. Yeah. And so who should do this to get free money? Anybody whose kid was born 2025 or later. That's an easy yes. If it's not that, then you're not in the free money camp. And so you're in the, do I want to get involved in essentially a traditional IRA with some investment capacities, a nice concrete ceiling for intergenerational wealth transfer, perhaps a component of education and financial literacy for your kids where you're going to, this isn't different from other investment accounts, but it is a sort of part of the experience as you can show them, you got a balance here. Your mom and dad put some money into this and it'll turn into something for you one day. And maybe eventually you want to begin to equip them to deal with that. It is going to be theirs when they're 18. So that is definitely part of the journey when it's well thought out.
Yeah. And I think a big piece here for me as I think through this as a parent. So my kids are 15, 12, and 9. I'm a very intentional dad. And so I try to be as intentional as I can in pretty much every aspect of my life. And so as I'm thinking through this, I'm thinking through also what this teaches my kid about personal finance, what sort of situation it sets them up for, because I think that there's a very good argument to be made that for kids that grow up in wealthy homes, their perspective on money and connecting that to hard work, for example, doesn't always happen. And so how to save money and how to keep money and keep saving money until you want to buy something. The other day we were at a Wesley's baseball tournament, went all the way up to Maryland for this thing. Yes, I'm one of those crazy travel baseball dads. And so we take the 6-hour drive, 7-hour drive up to Maryland, and he has this tournament he got asked to guest play for, which was a huge honor for him. And they have this Rawlings baseball bat display where you can buy baseball bats. And I walk up and we're looking at it, and Wesley's about a year away from needing what's called a BB core. It's kind of just a different standard of bat than the one that he uses right now. Cause as you get older, the bats have to get less hot, because it turns out when you have a large grown man swinging something that hits a baseball like a trampoline, that's a great way to kill people. And so the bats actually get less and less explosive as you get older. And so by 8th grade, he needs to be swinging this kind of bat. He's starting 7th grade. So he needs some time to adapt to it. And he's like, "Hey dad, can I get this bat?" And I'm talking to the guy, and there's a 20% discount if you buy it here live. And it's a $450 bat, because that bat costs that much money nowadays. Yes, you heard that. And baseball.
Oh my gosh.
Expensive. And it's okay. I'm sitting at what, 360, whatever that number is. And so Wesley, "Hey dad, I really would like to get this bat. I need to transition to a BB core at some point." And Wesley has money that I know he has saved. And so I turned to Wesley and I was like, "Hey, look, I'll make you a deal. If you put every dollar that you've saved for the last 5 months towards that bat, I will pay for whatever's left." I knew that it was about a couple hundred dollars for him. And so from my standpoint, I bought a $450 bat for about $150, right? And Wesley spent $200 that he'd been working very hard to save over several months to buy that bat. And we live in a house where I could just buy the bat for him. Full stop, no questions asked. That I wouldn't even blink an eye spending $450 on a baseball bat. And so I recognize the kind of life that I live. I need my kid to understand that money doesn't grow on trees, that it takes hard work. It also takes your ability to save money after you receive it. And that if you want to buy nice things, those financial habits will help you accomplish those goals later in life. And so as I'm thinking through this Trump account, I'm thinking through the same things of what behavioral finance lessons do I need to be teaching my kid about this account that's going to have $300,000 or $400,000 sitting in it when he turns 18 or she turns 18, so that they can use this account in a way that isn't going to completely just destroy them. Because I think that giving money to kids is not always a great thing, is what my point is. You have to do it thoughtfully.
Yeah. And can it be part of the education process of the Trump account? It could. Are there better tools? I think there are. Just an UTMA account, which is essentially a taxable brokerage account with sort of a parental plug-in where you can also administer it. I think that's a great way to learn how to save. Once you're earning a little money, Roth IRA, awesome. You're participating. And there's actually more of an open architecture in terms of investments. So if they're like, "My grandma."
But I guess what I'm saying is any of these accounts, you need to be intentional about how you're going to prevent entitlement, how you're going to prevent kids from just thinking that money exists and disconnecting it from the thing that makes money exist, which is work and providing value in this world. I think that's a concern.
No question. The other thing about these Trump accounts that sort of makes me, at least because of these concerns, that makes me less likely to think that this is going to be a high utilization for either me or many of my clients is, and again, we're talking about the 1% sort of crowd, but do I want to totally insulate my kids for their retirement starting at their age 1? Maybe. Huh. Maybe some people would answer that yes. Frankly, just by virtue of being a white collar professional for a few years, you're going to amass some amount of wealth, even if you own a home and you never do anything else, there's going to be something you're leaving your kids. That'll probably be a meaningful something. So do you need to do more above and beyond that? You're probably going to have retirement accounts you don't fully spend down. There's enough other stuff out there. Is this really additive? For some families, perhaps. For a lot of families, I think it's going to create some administrative complexity. It's going to create some things you got to keep track of. It's going to create the hazard of, "I'm giving my 18-year-old the keys to an account with $250,000 in it, and I hope that they do the right thing and start the Roth conversions for a few years." But you really can't make them. And
I guess there are other vehicles too that kind of marry these ideas. Now you have to wait a certain amount of time, but like I'm thinking of specifically a Roth IRA for a kid once they start working, right? Yep. I'm totally going to do this. The second that my oldest Grace, she starts working, I'm going to tell her, "Look, you're going to take all of the money that you're earning and you're going to put that into a Roth IRA. Because I need you to connect hard work with saving money and saving money with sound investing, and sound investing causing interest and money to accumulate. And so connecting all those dots from the work that she's done. And I'll tell her, every dollar you put in there, I will pay you. Like, I'm going to give you money from mom and dad's account to, so you're still going to be able to spend some money because you're working hard. And I understand you want to enjoy some of that. Right. But then like now I haven't had that disconnect between money just amazingly growing out of thin air. Right. And so there are ways to save. Granted, for most people, unless your kid's like a child actor, you probably have to wait until they can actually provide a value to society that'll pay them. I come to that on the other side.
And by the way, this Roth funding strategy we're talking about, like if you max out a Roth between the ages of 12 and 18, you're probably still talking about a 7-figure portfolio in retirement of tax-free money.
Yep.
Assuming you save zero from ages 19 through 64. Mm-hmm. That's not nothing. And so,
In your opinion, Justin, like who is this account like just explicitly not for? Like who are the people that are listening to this and are like, you know what? I should probably not be doing this.
In the savings hierarchy I described, if you're not already on track for your own retirement, if you're not stuffing money into taxable accounts, if things are not on track for your own future, then you got to deal with your own future or else you're going to be living in your kid's basement. And you don't want to both have funded Trump accounts for your kids and be living in their basement. That is not a good configuration there.
This is a good time to remind people that adage is often taught in this space that I fundamentally agree with, not agreed by all, but I agree with, is that you can finance college education. You cannot finance your retirement. And so if you're not on track to retire by the age that you want, but you're one of those people that's just a diehard, I'm absolutely going to pay for every dollar of my kid's education, despite the fact that cost of attendance has gone up by 6% or 8% every year for the last 20 years, which by the way, makes it an unbelievably high number. Like the cost of attendance for college now is stupid. But there are people out there who just like that is such a high value for them that they're going to have to retire when they're 75 because the amount of money to send their kids to college, particularly if you're a physician who started saving money late because you didn't make money till your 30s. This for me kind of goes in that same category of like, you need to make sure you are actually going to be able to retire by an age that you want before we're talking about funding accounts like this. And that includes 529s in my opinion.
Yeah. So be on track for your own retirement. If you like administrative simplicity and streamlining, it was easy to open the account. So I said I did it myself. I opened 3 accounts in probably 8 minutes. I funded each of them with a contribution within that amount of time. It was ridiculously easy. I now have an app on my phone that's the Trump account app. Can I link that to anything else? Probably not.
Does it have a picture of Trump on the app? Is there a picture of Trump on the app?
I actually don't remember. I did notice in the end user licensing agreement, which occasionally I do like to peruse, so I'm agreeing that facial geometry and biometric information is going to be, and I'm just like, I draw the line at facial geometry. I'm the guy who goes through TSA pre-check and I'm like, please don't take a picture of my face. You can look at my driver's license. I'm not going to stand in front of the camera and smile. That's how I'm like hyper.
What do they say when you do that?
They say, okay, cool. Because there's that sign there when you're flying. That's if you request to not be, have your picture taken, just let us know.
I've never seen that sign. Okay, anyway.
Oh, yeah, dude, I do a fair amount of air travel. It's there. But here's the point. If you're hyper privacy minded and you don't want to have your facial geometry sitting in a database of the Treasury Department, perhaps you would want to pass on this. You're trying to fund college first and you are that family that has a high value on higher ed and you're wanting to maybe pay the total cost of attendance to send your kid to a private liberal arts university. That's going to be easily, you would be hard pressed to overfund a 529 based on statutory maximums. You just need to
you're
do that.
You're talking about $300,000 to $400,000. It's a lot.
Oh, at least more. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that would make this not a fit because you should be focusing on those accounts. If you don't believe in creating independent wealth for your kids before they understand what wealth is, you're already doing that just by virtue of being wealthy if they are part of your estate plan. But this is specifically targeted for, I'm going to save for my kids' retirement. If you don't believe in doing that, then this is not something that would make sense for you. And I think the biggest argument I can make against the Trump account, and I don't feel strongly about this, but I have a lot of clients who value simplicity. And there is inevitably complexity in your life and you're going to have a lot to manage. And for our client, when you work with a professional, it allows you to more easily administer greater complexity with less stress. But for me, I love keeping things as simple as I want the simplest possible path to achieve the goal. That is the way we should go. Do Trump accounts create a more expeditious journey to that goal? Maybe
you got to have a lot of other boxes checked first. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. I think that's a good overview. And honestly, it's going to get a lot of airtime because these accounts are new. They sound exciting. The government's going to give you free money. And I do think it's worth pointing out what you said earlier, which is that if you are having a child born, I don't know if we have the dates that we can share with people, but if you have a child where they're just going to give you $1,000, like you should obviously just at least at a bare minimum, take the $1,000. That's not your $1,000. It's the government giving you $1,000, which by
it
itself,
is mine, Jimmy.
That's fair. Taxes were paid. Touche. But that $1,000 is not an inconsequential amount of money.
That's
after
right.
Compounds
right.
for 50
and
years.
And it's easier to say yes if there's free money. And there's private donors, like you mentioned, for your kids. This is one of these things that's like still developing. I know Michael Dell, the founder of Dell Computers, made a big multi-billions gift, essentially, where he's privately funding a little further up the age brackets. So I think as some of that continues to happen, there may be more free money in play. And if you like the idea of free money, then this is definitely worth considering. I will say that I was at my credit union the other day and they're like, if you can get this debit card and start using it for 5 transactions a month, we'll give you an extra $100 a month on your credit into your checking account. And I realized, it's funny, this is an interesting psychological experiment. I realized that having a debit card and committing to 5 transactions a month in my checking account was worth some amount in excess of $100 to me. And I said, I will not take that deal, mostly because debit cards are a huge liability. And if it gets stolen, your bank account gets drained. That's a much bigger problem than arguing with American Express about having charges canceled. But if you're that minded in terms of simplicity, streamline, liability of other accounts, then that can govern the way that you think about this. And that's probably the best fit for you, is to just pass on Trump accounts.
Makes a ton of sense. Justin, I appreciate doing the deep dive and the research on this topic, because I know it's one that we've both gotten emails about and something that needed to be discussed on the show. So thanks for tagging along, as always, and being a part of the Money Meets Medicine community and sharing the podcast with your friends. As you head out, please don't forget, if you don't have disability insurance, head over to moneymeetsmedicine.com/disability. We would be more than happy and honored to help get you quotes at Money Meets Medicine Disability Insurance. All right, everybody. We'll see you next week. Cheers.
Justin Harvey is a certified financial planner at APM Wealth, where he helps anesthesiologists and pain medicine physicians. Dr. Jimmy Turner is a practicing academic anesthesiologist at Wake Forest in North Carolina. He's also a licensed insurance agent. However, either Justin or Jimmy are your financial planner, investment advisor, or insurance agent. This show is expressly for general education and entertainment purposes only. Nothing should be considered financial advice. All views expressed are solely the views of the guests on the show and do not represent the views or opinions of their employer.
Justin Harvey is a certified financial planner at APM Wealth, where he provides financial advisory services for physicians and their families. Dr. Jimmy Turner is a practicing anesthesiologist in North Carolina and a licensed insurance agent. However, neither Justin nor Jimmy is your financial planner, investment advisor, or insurance agent, and nothing discussed on this show creates that kind of relationship. This show is expressly for general education and entertainment purposes only, and nothing should be considered financial, investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. The views expressed by the hosts and any guests are solely their own and do not represent the views or opinions of their employers, and their appearance on the show does not constitute an endorsement of their services. Before making any financial decisions, of course, consult your own financial, tax, or legal professional who understands your individual situation.